Welcome back to Mental Health Integration, Week 8, Part 3. Now we get to talk about limits. Now we just spent some time talking about how there can be this benefit from the habits that we build in mental health issues, that we can create this forward momentum that keeps things moving. But a second thing that it does is it can also put boundaries around what we can do and create a little more sense of sanity. So, I want to bring this in. We've had this thought of paradox, mental illness as a gift, a couple times, and we're going to bring it in a little bit differently now, because a gift doesn't necessarily mean you do more. Sometimes it means you do less. I want to start with a quote from an entrepreneur about the entrepreneurial grind. Entrepreneur and New York Times bestselling author Grant Cardone was deep in debt before building his business into a multi-million dollar fortune. What sets his self-made millionaire apart from the rest of the population, he says, is how much he works. Most people work 9 to 5. I work 95 hours per week. If you ever want to be a millionaire, you need to stop doing the 9 to 5 and start doing 95. That comes out to about 14 hours of work a day. Now, I put this up because in the era of Shark Tank and The Profit and all of these shows glamorizing the entrepreneur, there is this drive to be more, do more. There's this drive to move up the corporate ladder and constantly be progressing. But one of the things that mental illness does is it has to put a cap on something. How can this space exist and you keep your sanity? Or even just as we talked about earlier, how does this work-life balance thing work with the Sabbath? How are you supposed to stop if you're supposed to work 95 hours a week? How are you supposed to have time? Where's your margin? How are you supposed to take care of your family? And it begs another question. How much is too much? We've talked a lot about how integration is experience and faith, and how they intersect harmoniously. We've talked a lot about the gift of reorientation and what are your priorities. But now we need to talk a little bit about how this can be a gift. Now, a little backstory on me. I was still in seminary when I founded My Quiet Cave to help churches work with mental illnesses, and that was the first real business that I had started. So, jumping into that, there's this expectation that you just need to do everything because you're the only person on the staff, right? We didn't have salaries. We didn't have anything. We didn't know how to fundraise. We didn't even have a plan. What we did know is that we could work, and that if something needed to get done, it needed to get done by us. So we jumped into the work and doing things over and over and over again. And I remember seeing other organizations and talking to other entrepreneurs, and there was just this insane work ethic. People would get started at 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock in the morning. They would go all day. They would pick their kids up, hang out with their kids for a couple hours, and then work again in the night, and then repeat. It seemed like their whole life was consumed by work, except for maybe a 30-minute workout to try and make sure they were more effective at work and their time with their family. And there just came this realistic expectation for me that I can't do that. I realized pretty quickly with My Quiet Cave that I could work 50 hours a week, but if I was going to work more than that, the quality of my work and the quality of what I was doing and my own mental health immediately started to tank. And so I had to put limits on what I did and how much I could work and how much I could do. Now, when we started My Quiet Cave, we started with 3 of us. And after about a year and a half, we were down 2 of us. And we built these programs, but we didn't fundraise, so we burned ourselves out. So after about 2.5 years or 3 years, we were down to one of us, which meant it was just me trying to carry the organization. It was built for 3 people worth of programs and had no people worth of fundraising. And we were trying to carry this thing and move it, me and my board of directors, and no one knew what to do because it was way too much work for one person. And in that space, our fundraising moved really slowly, in large part because I had to put limits on how much work I could do, and the programs had to stay afloat. And what that meant was there was naturally this constriction around how much I could manage. And where the normal, you know, the Cardone attitude might be, work 95, just get it done. You have a whole extra work week every week if you just work it. I couldn't. There was this expectation from the entrepreneurial world to do something that I could not physically do. I was physically capable of working 10, 15, 20 hours of overtime if I desperately needed to. But oftentimes, if I worked 60 or 65 hours a week, I would end up having to take a day off the next week to recover because I was so exhausted. Because my bipolar disorder was acting up, or because I couldn't manage the stress. So there's this disconnect between the world that is glorified by culture of entrepreneur and my own position that I had even as entrepreneur. And they were incongruent. After 4 more years, we hired another employee. And then another year or two after that, we were up to a staff of 4, and the organization was growing and developing. But that was a slog, because for those 3-4 years, I was always up against my own limitations. And because of that, I want you to ask some questions. Because you have limitations too. I want you to ask, what are your priorities in regards to your time? Because you are able and capable of doing a lot. But your mental health issue, or the people of the mental health issues around you, just this realistic expectation, it will put caps on things. We talked about our capacity shrinking. Well, that means that you need to cut some things out. So what are your priorities? What are the most important things? And then the second question here is, what are you in relation to your values? The reason these are important questions, what are you in relation to your values? Your time priorities will be dictated by your values. But a lot of the time you'll have things that are time priorities that feel like things you ought or have to do that don't necessarily mesh with your value system. And one of the gifts of being disoriented and reoriented is you have the opportunity to reevaluate what is really important with your time. Because if your time doesn't match your values, you need to go back and find out why not, and reevaluate and figure out what you need to do to change that. So you have the gift of disorientation even in how you manage yourself, even how you manage your work, even how you manage your time. Some things you can never get out of. When I was running a nonprofit, there were things that I had to do. I had to do my work to make sure I was in accordance with the government stipulations. No way around that. If I didn't, we'd lose our 501c3, and that was not an option. I had to make sure that we were doing fundraising and that we were making sure we're getting receipts out. I had to make sure the programs in some way, shape, or form kept going. And I had to make sure that I was still on track in order to make sure that the nonprofit was staying afloat. There were some things you just had to do. But there were other questions like, do I really need to take this meeting? Or do I really need to keep this ongoing obligation? Or do we really need to start this other program right now? That I failed to ask until it was too late, And then I got to ask later and reevaluate and pull back so that I could manage to flourish as an individual and the organization could move forward. Because my general tendency was to build it and make it keep going, even when we didn't actually have the resources, manpower, anything to make that happen. The second thing I want you to look at is, who is God? And why does that matter in the context of limits? Sometimes it feels like we need to grow and grow and grow and grow and grow. Sometimes it feels like, you know, we talked about Job in the previous section, that Job had this massive, massive farm. And then somehow we need to work hard to make sure it grows twice as big. But that's not who God is. It said that God blessed Job, not that Job worked his tail off and it grew. So we need to reevaluate and see God differently, and then reevaluate and say, okay, well, what can I do and how can I do what I can and allow God to do the rest? How do my limits not be incongruent with what God can do, but can be congruent with what God can do? Because he knows who I am. He knows what he's working with. He is in no way surprised that I can't do something. He is not even surprised that I don't know I can't do something. He is just present. And he is just fully knowing exactly what needs to go on. Next, what are you capable of? And what limits do you need to put in place? I had to put limits around what I could do. We've already established that. I also had to put some things in place, like I had to exercise 3 or 4 times a week to make sure that I could be effective at work. That takes away from work time, but it means that I'm actually effective. I had to do some other things, like say I am not going to work on Sundays, or I'm not going to work on weekends. I am not going to work in evenings after I get home from work. I can start early in the morning, but I can't start during certain early times. All of these things created restrictions. And I had to put those limits in place to make sure that I could be healthy enough to keep the organization going. We'd already lost 2 employees to burnout. We didn't need to lose the last one. And also, what are you capable of? There is a realistic expectation that as much as I looked at my friends and went, wow, I wish I could build an organization like they can, I couldn't. And God knew that when he called me to start the organization I started. So, know that what you're capable of, God knows your capacity. And that is just fine. He's not going to call you to do more than that. He's going to call you to be you. I love this quote. This is from Peter Scazzaro from The Emotionally Healthy Leader. We lead more of who we are than out of what we do, strategic or otherwise. If we fail to recognize that who we are on the inside informs every aspect of our leadership, we will do damage to ourselves and to those who we lead. Your job as a faith leader, in many ways, is to be the best you can possibly be. That means taking care of yourself. It means investing in how you see God. It means taking time away to abide with God and be personal with God so that you can grow in your relationship. And it creates space for you to share who God is out of your personal experience. And you're not sharing knowledge, you're sharing yourself. This changes how you lead. And whether this is mental health or whether this is anything, we have these opportunities to parse down what we do in order to make sure that we do something well. In this case, we do something as God would have us do it instead of just doing it the way that we want to do it. And this is critically important. So with that said, do the good thing. You don't need to be able to do everything. You don't need to be able to do all the things. Put limits around the right thing to do and then do it really, really, really well. Because God called you to do that one thing. Just pour in and just go for it. This was a much shorter segment. We're going to be back to talking more about integrations and kind of these bigger topics next time. But I wanted to make sure that you saw these opportunities as fully what they are, as these profound chances to actually create momentum and growth, to parse down things so that you can be yourself, and to enjoy the benefits of having a disorienting opportunity like a mental illness. Thanks.